I'm Debbie King, and I work with Maria Banalek and Lauren Chu alongside Paul Webber to provide this series of UK teleclasses, and would like to welcome you all this afternoon to this session, which is the Voices of IPS. We have a number of members of the society with us this afternoon, and you'll see from your presentations that they've all got a little bit to say about their own relevant areas of interest. So without further ado, I will kick off by introducing Martin Kiernan, who is the president of IPS, who will give you a brief update, and then we'll move straight in to the presentations from the rest of the board. So, Martin, over to you.
Thanks very much, Debbie. It's Martin Kiernan here, speaking from a very beautifully sunny London today. Delighted to be able to join you all. I'm pleased to say we have a stellar cast of people waiting to speak to you, so I won't hold you for too long. But before I kick off, I must say thanks again to Paul Webber for facilitating this teleclass, because without his support, of course, this sort of thing wouldn't be happening. So we're really grateful to Paul. So moving on to my first slide, and really my update is around how the IPS is progressing. I mean, we're definitely getting our voice heard with governments throughout the UK and the Republic of Ireland. We're now, you'll have seen from the President's Bulletin, getting involved in more consultation discussions with them around new objective setting and the way healthcare-associated programs are going. We're more involved with the national agencies like Health Protection Scotland and the Health Protection Agency down in England, and I'm sure that the same will be going on in Wales and the other parts of the UK. We're involved more in education and trying to develop programs around the country, so that's good. We're involved in supply chain product councils, so and I'm hoping the other countries will be getting involved in the same way that England are in choosing new products that make life an awful lot easier out there clinically. And as you may have noticed a little while ago, we also got involved with the RCN and worked very closely with Rose Gallagher on the 10 minimum standards campaign, which we launched at the Houses of Parliament back in January. It's a very well received meeting, and the 10 standards you can download off the RCN website, but they're based around education and demonstrable education standards across the nations, and provision of facilities to allow people to effectively decontaminate their environment around them. Moving on to the next slide, I mean, the moving forward is really quite exciting. Recently, we hit over 1,700 members for the first time ever, which is tremendous. Our special interest groups are forging forward. The Mental Health Forum had their first conference back in February. It had a fantastic attendance, addressed by the chief nurse. Dipsy Development seems to have gone extremely well. Lots of positive feedback from that. Even the food evaluated well, so they've really done something spectacular there. The Surveillance Forum are moving forward, developing competencies. I need to update you on the community group, because as you may have noticed in the bulletin and the email I had to send out recently, unfortunately, it looked like we were going to not be able to find a replacement for Martin Jones, who's done tremendous work for the last couple of years. But I'm very glad to say that after that email, I've had about at least 7 or 8 good expressions of interest to people. So I'm completely confident now that the community group will continue to progress in the way it has been, because it's a very successful group. So we have an ambitious agenda at the moment. We've got education that Emma's going to be talking to about, research and development. Heather will be talking to you about the journal. Paul's going to be covering that in a moment. We've got the IT moving forward with the website. I'm pleased to say that we were a bit concerned with poor Dawn Hill and their illness, but she seems to be progressing extremely well, so that's some extremely good news, and you may have seen the good news about her charity walk recently. And as an interim measure, Judy Potter has agreed very kindly to take forward the quality improvement tools, and it looks like we're hoping that they will be delivered on time in September, as we were expecting. So we have an extremely ambitious agenda. You're going to be hearing more about that now over the next 55 minutes. And it's my pleasure first to introduce Paul Weaving, who's the editor of the Journal of Infection Prevention, who's going to be talking to us about the journal. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you very much, Martin. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm speaking to you from a very sunny South London this afternoon. Those of you that are members of the IPS will have noticed that since the beginning of this year, your British Journal of Infection Control has become the Journal of Infection Prevention, and that was a change that we thought was necessary to make just to reflect the change in emphasis in the speciality nowadays and the change in emphasis on the society as well. Those of you who aren't members of the IPS, I'll just point out that the membership of the IPS actually costs less than a subscription to the Journal of Infection Prevention. So a plea for, not a plea, reason to join the society. I work with other members of the journal's editorial board to try and make the journal as useful and as interesting to you as we possibly can. The other members of the editorial board, like myself, are infection prevention and control professionals, but we're supported by a professional publishing house in production of the journal. We would very much like to hear from our readers and members what you would like to see and read in the journal. As well as reading the journal, though, you also have the opportunity to write for it. And the journal gives you the opportunity to become a published author, which is, to my mind, a very important stage in the development of any professional nurse, and certainly in infection prevention and control. And if you look on the next slide, you will see that there are some tips on writing for publication. The first thing I would say, if you're thinking of writing for publication, is please go ahead and do it. Be confident that you've got something valuable to say. I'm sure that you, like the rest of us, have been to many meetings where the conversation has gone along the lines of, what are you doing about such and such, whatever the key topic of the day is? And people are interested in your opinions then, and they'd be interested to see your opinions in print, and they'd be interested to read what you've got to say. Think about what you'd like to see an article on in the journal, and then think about, well, actually, I could write that article. What would you like to read yourself? What do you think that your colleagues would like to read? One thing that I'm very keen to get in the journal nowadays is accounts of how people have developed the service in their own particular areas of work and areas of expertise. And those are the sorts of things that other people can read and think, yes, that's something that we could do here. Obviously, we can't do that unless people are going to actually write about their experiences. So please do consider writing about what you've done. Or if there's something that you would like to know more about, if there's something that you would like to see a review article on, for example, that sums up the latest research or thinking on a particular topic, either let us know that you'd like to read that and we might be able to commission it, or you could be the person who would write that review article. Once you've decided that you'd like to write an article, then develop an outline plan for it. Look at similar types of articles and see how they've been put together, and then develop a plan for your own. If you move on to the next slide now, you'll see that there are some essential points for when you're writing an article. If you go onto the journal's website, you can follow the link from the IPS homepage. You'll see that there are some contributor guidelines for the journal. Read through those. You'll find that they give very useful points. Excuse me. They give some very useful points and tips on how to actually write for publication. So read through those and follow them as you're writing your article. Once you've gone through it, spell check it. And remember that while your PC may well have a spell checker on, it doesn't have a sense checker on. So make sure that what you've written actually makes sense, and that even though the spell checker's not picking things up, that you haven't got the wrong word in place or something. And check your references, because as an article goes through the review process, one of the things that the reviewers will be looking for is that the references are accurate and appropriate. And of course, when it comes to publication, very many people reading your article may well want to follow up the references afterwards. And so, for their benefit, make sure that you get them right if you possibly can do. Once you've written your article, it's always useful to get somebody else to proofread it for you. And that's something that I would recommend doing at any stage in the process. If you are unsure about giving it to one of your colleagues or friends to proofread, then by all means send it directly to me. The editor at ips.uk.net email address is linked directly from the IPS homepage, and you can send any inquiries you've got about publication or any papers that you would like help or advice on. Either I can do it myself, or you can get help and advice from the other specialists on the editorial board. We're very lucky that on the editorial board at the moment we have specialists in pharmacy and in dentistry, as well as the more common areas of infection prevention and control. So there's a very good chance that we'll have somebody there that will be able to give you the help and advice you need for your particular article. Once we've got your article underway, we will do our best to make sure that we get it through our review system. The Journal of Infection Prevention runs a double-blind peer review system that's organized, as most journals are nowadays, through an electronic submission system. The electronic submission system can seem a little bit daunting, but please don't be put off by it. Again, if you have any problems, get directly in touch with me and we'll see what we can do to help. Once your article's been submitted, it's sent anonymously to peer reviewers. These are generally people who are specialists in the area that you've written about, and they will do their very best to give you constructive feedback. What I would say is, don't be put off if the feedback that you get the first time you submit is that the article isn't quite ready to be published yet. You'll generally, again, get help and advice on how to improve it and how to make it more suitable for publication. And it is well worth persevering. Speaking from experience, I would say that the buzz that you get the first time you see an article of yours in print is like no other. It is incredibly satisfying, both personally and professionally. So please go ahead, write, submit, and I will look forward to reading your articles as you submit them, and I'm sure that all your colleagues will look forward to reading your articles when they appear in print. So now I'm going to pass you back to Martin, and I think we're going to go on to hear from Debbie Wright about the scientific program of this year's conference.
Oh, thanks very much for that, Paul. I think there's a lot of good advice there for people. And I personally would really encourage people to try and submit, because I'd echo what Paul says. When you first see something that you've written and published, it gives you such a buzz, and other people will enjoy seeing the fruits of your effort. Well, it's now my pleasure to hand on to Debbie Wright, the Deputy Coordinator of the Scientific Program Committee. Debbie's also a nurse consultant at NHS Central Lancashire, and she's going to be talking to us about Conference 2009. So welcome, Debbie.
Hello, Martin. Thank you very much, and hello to everybody who's listening from a very cloudy Lancashire, unfortunately. On to my first slide. Infection Prevention 09 is being held from the 21st to the 23rd of September 2009 this year at the Harrogate International Centre, Yorkshire. This event promises to be the Infection Prevention Control Conference of the year. The theme, Celebrating the Past, Looking to the Future, recognises the appointment of the first infection control nurse in 1969 in Torquay. Going on to the next slide, the three-day programme encompasses three overarching areas pertinent to infection prevention and control. Day one focuses on informing expert practice. Day two focuses on promoting excellence in infection prevention. And day three explores sustaining systems for patient safety. Each day and session will have clear learning objectives and opportunities described within the programme, and they're online at the moment as well. Moving on to the next slide. As the UK's largest infection prevention and control conference and exhibition, the event offers a dynamic blend of the best of the UK and worldwide speakers on infection prevention and control. This slide shows a preview of some of the eminent speakers already confirmed for conference this year. This year's ALIF lecture will be delivered by Professor Mark Wilcox, who will be posing the question, mRSA in care homes, is it a reflection of hospitals or community? and exploring some of the possible interventions to overcome this as well. Moving on to the next slide. Infection Prevention 09 offers the broadest range of topics and latest developments in the prevention and management of healthcare-associated infections. The varied programming topics are applicable to all working within the field of infection prevention and control, either in the acute or the community settings. Key topics to be explored to inform future practice include antimicrobial resistance, epidemiology and health economics, systems to support patient safety through hand hygiene, and how to optimise patient safety systems and reliability in IV systems will also be explored. Just on to the next slide. The pertinent issues include the value of effective leadership in infection prevention and control. Also discussed will be the practical management strategies in relation to norovirus, the prevention and control of healthcare-associated infections in dentistry, and the application of MRSA screening strategies across the UK. These are amongst some of the varied programme topics. All the information is currently available on the Infection Prevention Society website, and there's a link directly through to the conference website. This year sees the inaugural E.M. Cotterill Lecture, which is going to be presented by Professor Robert Pratt, titled In Pursuit of Excellence. This lecture has been named after the first infection control nurse in Torquay, Miss E.M. Cotterill, in 1969. Moving on to the next slide. Other highlights of conference include we have already been agreed to have 17 CME points awarded from the Royal College of Pathology, which is a clear reflection of the quality of the programme already. Another exciting development this year is the launch of the IV Forum conference theme. This programme will look back at the start of the modern IV practice with an inaugural Dr. Thomas Latter lecture from Neil McGilvery, who is an honorary postdoctoral fellow in Scottish history at the University of Edinburgh. The renowned expert Marcia Ryder from California will also be speaking in the afternoon on a lecture regarding to biofilms and getting to the source of vascular access infections. Another development this year is the free drop-in sessions, which are going to be provided to care homes within the area of Harrogate. These are going to be done on the Monday and the Wednesday of conference, and they're going to be short sessions for care homes where they will also have access to the exhibition. The event also hosts the largest infection prevention exhibition within the UK, and currently all the exhibition space is already sold out. In addition to the excellent programme, there are also opportunities for free paper and poster presentations, and last year we received a record number of posters which were submitted. This year the poster area has been increased to actually support this. Anyone wishing to actually complete an abstract for a free paper or poster will be provided, as Paul said, for article submissions. There is a process to actually support people if they wish to actually submit an article, and all the information, again, is on the website. The formal gala dinner is being held on the 22nd of September at the Majestic Hotel, and there's also going to be a quiz night on the 21st on the Monday at the Harrogate Centre. Moving on to the next slide. Infection Prevention 09 is the best value for money conference of the year. Registration for delegates is now opening. We've already had over 80 people registered, taking full advantage of the early bird rate until the 5th of June. As a new innovation this year, any non-member wishing to attend can pay to join the society and then take advantage of the members' rate at the same time. This would effectively give them free membership to Infection Prevention Society for a year. The deadline for abstract submission is the 5th of June, so I would urge you to actually start thinking about submitting those online as soon as possible. All the information, as I've said, currently is on the IPS website. Infection Prevention 09 promises to be one of the most exciting conferences in a long line of events held by the Infection Prevention Society. I certainly look forward to welcoming you to Harrogate, to what I'm sure will be one of our most successful events to date. Thank you very much.
Oh, thanks very much for that, Deb. I'm certainly looking forward to meeting as many colleagues as possible in Harrogate. It's such a terrific venue. We had a really good event there last year. It's signalling up to be even better this year. We're well ahead of our registrations for last year's conference. We've sold the conference exhibition out, so it's looking to be a tremendous event, so I'm really looking forward to that. It's now my pleasure to move on to the Education and Professional Development Committee coordinator, Emma Burnett, who's going to be telling us about the activities of that extremely active group that she's leading at the moment. So welcome, Emma.
Thank you very much, Martin. Good afternoon, everybody. Not to be outdone, it's absolutely gorgeous here in Scotland as well. We have no snow, no rain, no wind. So it's beautiful, sunny Scotland too. As Martin said, my name is Emma and I'm the coordinator of the Education and Professional Development Committee. I'm also a lecturer for infection prevention control at the University of Dundee. Now, the first slide, as you can see, our committee formed in June 2008, and we have lots of exciting developments and innovation going on. As you can see by the members, some of you may recognise these names. We have Maria Benalik, who's a lecturer at the University of Plymouth, Jean Lawrence, who's an infection control manager at West Yorkshire, Rosilla Horton, a lecturer in infection control at University of Leeds. We have Ange Richards, who is a specialist nurse for infection prevention control, Central Lancashire PCT. Recently joined our committee, we have Margaret Tannehill, who's the lead consultant nurse for Health Protection Scotland, and Sarah Murdoch, who's a nurse consultant for Forth Valley. The great thing about our committee is the diversity of every member's role within infection prevention control allows for a huge range of expertise bringing to the committee and ultimately Infection Prevention Society. You'll see from the next slide just an overview of the importance of education and professional development, and I don't need to sit down here and tell you that how fundamental it is in requirement to underpin the quality of healthcare provided. But our committee are absolutely 100% committed in helping IPS members to become a confident, competent workforce within the society. However, it's important to note that as a committee, we can't sit in isolation, and I think it's through communication, collaboration, teamwork to build our strong links with the board, all IPS branches, and we also aim to continually enhance collaborated working within the committee with the Research and Development Committee, the Scientific Committee, Editorial Board and the IT Committee. So there's a huge amount of expertise with some fantastic ideas to take this forward. On the next slide, I've just given a basic overview of the key objectives. Unfortunately, we only have 15 minutes to do this, which is a challenge in itself. So I'll just let you read through the key objectives, but I wanted to concentrate especially for this talk today on the competencies review and the accreditation, because these are two significant things involved within the Education and Professional Development Committee. If time allows, I will come back to the other things, but I do want to concentrate on the competencies. So if we can go on to the next slide. And just to say, in order to meet the local and the national requirements of infection prevention and control teams, to give you some background, the ICNA saw the successful publication of the core competencies for infection prevention and control practice in 2000, which was led by Debbie King and a large variety of individuals for the working group. This then led to the further development and the redesign of the competencies in 2004. Now sitting at 2009, as you are aware, things have now significantly moved forward due to rapid changes in healthcare delivery throughout the UK and the Republic of Ireland. So with the current political and economic drivers around HCAI and the evolving nature and the diversity of teams, and I think that's an important component, over the years infection prevention and control teams have expanded hugely and the roles are very, very diverse. So we now feel it's now necessary to move forward and develop a new set of core competencies that will reflect the requirements of education and professional development within these diverse teams. So our objectives at the moment are huge, basically to produce new national core competencies that can be utilised by all infection prevention and control practitioners, and we're not just talking about nurses, we're talking about all practitioners. And from the most junior to the most senior, there are newly qualified new infection prevention and control nurses in post to very senior, so we need to be able to cater for everybody and make sure there's core competencies there to enable each individual to develop as they see fit to their individual needs and to the needs of the service. So these will outline specific core competencies which individuals then can work towards within their working environment. What we also intend to do is to organise and facilitate a robust marking strategy, and that's an important component of this to promote the final competencies. This will include a national launch, and we want to make sure that the teams are aware of these competencies, they know how to use them, they know how to self-assess and to measure their developments against that. In addition to this, we're also going to develop a strategy to allow us to measure the utilisation of these competencies and ensure teams and individuals are maximising their capacity. And we're going to give help throughout. We'll probably utilise the branches and the educational leads within that, but there's going to be quite a robust strategy in place for that. So how are we going to do this? We've completed a project initiation document, and it's very similar to a business plan, so it lays everything out in each stages. And just to give you an outline of where we're at with these core competencies, we first met back in October 2008 to discuss how we're going to take this forward. November 2008 saw a competencies consolidation review day, whereby all IPS members were given the opportunity through communication with branch coordinators to become active members of a working party per se. So we generated a huge interest, UK and Republic of Ireland representation, and held a discussion day around the competencies. And it was sort of like a blue sky day, and we posed questions, we did workshops, we got into group work, and there was loads and loads of data generated for us to take that forward. Now, since then, the Education Professional Development Committee have been working extremely hard to pull all this information together. And what we've done now is almost produced a first draft of specific competencies. So we hope they will be ready to circulate to the working party in May. That's a significant step forward for us for these competencies. Now, through considering our deliverables and the timescales, we do hope to have a complete document ready for approximately March, April next year. We did initially aim to have the competency document ready to launch in September, but in view of the content of the document, we really wanted to get it right, so we're going to take our time and make sure that it is right for a national launch next year. We'll also continually link with all IPS members and external agencies and other areas of work. It's important we take into consideration the European core curriculum for training and infection control practitioners that was published by IPSI in 2008, and we're in communication with Barry Cookson about that. There's also the KSF, which will significantly make an impact in these core competencies, because we want to be able to, certainly for the NHS organisations, we want to be able to allow practitioners to match their development and their competencies against the KSF, which will be a huge benefit. And we're also looking at the UK initiative, the Modernising Nursing Careers. So all these documents play a significant part of the development of our competencies. What we do aim to do is produce as well both hard copy and electronic copies of the document, so practitioners can decide how they choose to utilise them. So that's just a very, very quick overview of the competencies. I want you to bring you next to the accreditation. And while you can read all through these bullet points, I just wanted to outline that historically, out with academic qualifications, courses in infection prevention and control practitioner have continued their education and professional development in many ways. For example, we all attend study days, seminars, workshops or conferences. And while this is vital for development, gaining formal recognition and accreditation is often not available. Now, in the economic climate that we are in now, organisations and individuals are now seeking to have the learning validated, and it reaffirms that through study, individuals have formalised recognised level of knowledge as a practitioner. Now, what we aim to do, and this is going to work in very, very well with our competencies, we aim to align this process with the production of the new competencies. And what we plan to do is, by developing a structured online educational program for infection prevention and control practitioner, and like with the competency, that this will be for all levels of practitioners, from the most junior to the most senior. They will then work through this program at their own pace and in respect to their own clinical environment in order to gain an accredited award. And that credit award will be based on the new competencies that have been developed. So what we're doing at the moment, we're in close communication with RDI, which is Resource Development International. If you want to have a look what that involves, then type in Google Resource Development International and you'll be able to read all about them. Now, this company has many, many years of experience in the field of accreditation within a variety of sectors. It's quality assured by EdExcel, and they are the EdExcel's largest provider of accredited customized qualifications. One of their biggest known clients is actually BT, and we're also in close communication at the moment. In fact, we've had a lot of discussions with BT this week about their working relationship with RDI. So we're now in contact with that, and we're looking at the best ways to take this forward. As I said, the accreditation, the time frame that we're undertaking with the competencies is going to work in very, very nicely with accreditation. So these are two really exciting projects that the Education Professional Development Committee are taking forward. But as I did say previously, you know, we're not doing it in isolation as a committee. We need the advice, we need the help and the support from all IPS members to push this forward. And this is a significant development for IPS and the members within the IPS. Now, I'm just going to check my time, and it's 3 minutes past two, so I'm actually going to go back to a couple of the objectives with the strategy. And I wanted to just highlight the importance of the educational leads. Now, they are individuals within each branch, and we're now pleased to say that educational leads have been appointed for each branch within the IPS. And we aim to work closely with them in order that education and professional development can be maximized. In addition to maintaining a consistent and collaborative working approach throughout the branches, and one significant progress we've made with the educational leads, that we're going to have an educational lead meeting day organised for December. All education leads have completed a questionnaire looking at their role, their responsibilities, how they'd like to progress with the role, and sort of areas that they'd like to take forward. So we're going to bring everybody together in December and look at ways that we can do that, which is an exciting time as well. It's all exciting. The next one is the National Study Day, and I just want to allude you to the fact that there is a National Study Day on the 30th of June, and we are one of three streams for this day. It's in Birmingham, and our theme in particular is looking at work about looking at risk and improving quality, especially in relation to Clostridium difficile and MRSA. It's an exciting program, and all details can be found on the IPS website. We'll also give you a chance to meet the rest of the education committee and have a chat with the work that we're doing. Okay, now I'm going to now go away to the end slide, to the conclusion, because I am aware of time and I don't want to eat into Heather's presentation. A slide that says, let IPS help you achieve your goal. And it's very much work in progress. And through the progress of the education and professional development activity, we as a society are confident that we can work together through the committees, through the board members, through the branches, through all individuals, work together on these challenges and exciting times. It's very much a changing time for infection prevention and control, but there are a lot of exciting and challenging times. And as a society, we're going to work with you to bring together an enthusiastic and a competent workforce. And I think I put you back to Martin for that, to introduce Heather. Thank you very much for listening.
Thanks very much for that, Emma. I'm sure you can all see the amazing amount of work that's going on with the EPDC. And my, you know, great thanks to them, because don't forget, we all do this in our own time. None of us gets time to do this sort of work. We're a volunteer society, and you know, there's a lot of tremendous work being undertaken by a small number of people on behalf of all of us, and therefore I really want everybody to contribute as much as they possibly can when they ask for comments when the draft documents are circulated. Now my pleasure to introduce Heather Loveday, who's coordinator of the R&D group, and Heather's going to be giving us an update on the research and development string of the IPS. Welcome, Heather.
Hello, everybody. Not to be outdone, I feel a little like a Eurovision judge saying, in Slough, it's sunny. Just to tell you what we've been working on in the R&D group, as you all know, we have a research strategy for IPS, which started in 2005 when we were in the first cycle of that, hoping to complete our work on that first cycle in 2010. And in the past 18 months, we've been working quite hard at establishing IPS research priority areas that we can feed into national, local, and in fact society research agendas. We've also been looking on the back of that at identifying some research theme groups that we can encourage members to become involved in, so that we can actually bring together members of the society across the different branches to work together on research that can either be locally funded, might be nationally funded, or may just help to develop research capacity and capability within the society. And then finally, been working on a framework for building research capacity within the society through a number of research awards. So if I go on to the next slide, the research and development priorities really started as a bottom-up approach. We spent quite a lot of time talking with members in branches about the things that really concerned them about practice, how they wanted to improve practice, and what sort of research they wanted to see carried out. And that resulted in us having these seven key areas, some of which overlap, as you can imagine, that we identified we would want to put some further meat on and try and develop some research questions and prioritise these areas for the society. We did that, if you look at the next slide, through doing a survey to a panel of 85 members of the society who had an explicit remit for research in their role. These included consultant nurses, specialist nurses, and academic researchers. And after a number of promptings, we actually had a fairly good response rate of just under 50%, with 40 surveys being returned. That's quite important because it's, as you can imagine, it's really important that we try and focus our efforts in our priority areas on things that are important to society members. And I'm hoping that this approach will actually end up with that result. If you move on to the next slide, you'll see that the themes that were scored as the highest priority by those that returned the survey actually focused on two key issues. Human behaviour, which is not unsurprising, and infection prevention interventions. Now, these are quite interconnected themes, and if you then look at the next slide, you can see that what people identified as being their next highest priorities also included human behaviour, infection prevention interventions, but also covered, again, perhaps not unsurprisingly, given the current focus on policy and organisational change and development, health policy and organisational issues. If you move on to the next slide, you can see that the three really key priorities that come out of this as a first pass are human behaviour, infection prevention interventions, and health policy. And these three themes are going to be the ones that we try and focus our development of our research theme groups. If you move on to the next slide, you'll see that what we've planned to do is establish at least two this year in our business plan. And the purpose of these groups is actually going to be to develop fundable proposals for collaborative research. And I highlight the issue of collaborative research because what we want to try and promote across the society is people working together to improve the research and evidence base for practice. And that means that we're going to have to work together with everyone across the piece in terms of infection prevention. And in order to do that, we need multidisciplinary groups and we need to enter a dialogue with those groups across the branches. Our first step is actually going to be to develop research agenda from the questions that were provided by the survey respondents. All of the survey respondents were asked to identify three key research questions in their first two priority areas. And so we've actually got something like 100 questions that we're actually going to be working together on trying to drill down and perhaps produce three or four key umbrella areas that will focus our research priorities. Initially, this process will involve those who responded to the survey and the wider panel that we approached, but will then be expanded across the branches to actually comment on those priorities before we then move forward with them. The other intention is for us to actually continue with these scene groups as virtual groups through our IPS website, and that will encourage people to be able to comment on the way methodologies are developed and to actually opt into studies as they're actually funded or developed across the society. Our third sort of key area of activity has actually been trying to build research capability and capacity, and there are two key issues that have arisen from that. Last year we actually updated people on the fact that we were pursuing the option of developing some research awards for the society, and I'm happy to say that the IPS board has now actually agreed the number and funding of those awards, and there'll be some exciting developments and announcements about those awards towards conference time. The second issue is that we're actually about to enter into a collaborative study with the University of Michigan and TBU on an evaluative survey of the translation of infection prevention evidence into acute care trusts. And this focuses on some work that was presented at conference 2 years ago now by Professor Sanjay Saint from the University of Michigan Health System at Ann Arbor, which is a Veterans Administration hospital, which actually looked at what types of evidence actually get translated into practice most effectively. This survey is being run with Ann Arbor and also a Swiss group. Herbert Sachs is doing it in Switzerland, and we'll actually be producing a comparative study about across those three countries, but also a study around what's happening in England. This is really quite an interesting issue at the moment because, as you all know, we're trying to develop and put into practice care bundles, and we're actually looking at how these actually are being implemented across the piece. If you look at the next slide, just to highlight that we currently have vacancies for members on the R&D group in the following branches: Wales, Northern Ireland, ERA and South West, and there'll be a call for applications next month, and I really would encourage people who are interested in becoming involved in the group to either informally call me or send me an email before they apply, but then please do apply. I'm really looking forward to getting some new members into the group. And then finally, I think just to again reiterate what Paul and Debbie have highlighted, that there's a lot of really good work going on within the society, and members are really active in terms of their own local research and service development projects. And if you would like to present one of these at conference this year, we'd like to support you if you're a novice researcher or a novice presenter, and would encourage you please to contact me in the first instance so that I can actually help you and direct you to someone who will be able to support you through that process. The closing date for submissions is the 5th of June, so make it as soon as you can. And I really would encourage you to present your work. It has been really encouraging to see society members presenting really exciting work over the last 3 or 4 years at conference, and it really does show that we are moving forward as a professional research and evidence-based society. Now I'm going to hand you back to Martin.
Thanks very much, Helen. I mean, it's, again, tremendous work. Opportunities for members to get involved, and as we've seen from the community group, there are people who are interested in getting involved, and maybe people just need to think about how they can advance their own career but work within the society. Now I'd like to hand over to Charlie Charlton, who's on the IT group. Charlie works in infection prevention control at Merseyscare NHS Trust, and he's going to be talking to us about the IPS website. He's responsible for most of the photographs on it, including some fairly dreadful ones of me. As they say, revenge is a dish best tasted cold. So welcome, Charlie.
Oh, thanks, Martin. I'm sure they're not that bad, the photos of you. Sam Moorhouse, who heads up the IPS IT group, has asked me to say a few words for you about the website. And just on the first slide there, it gives our web address, just for those who haven't seen it before, www.ips.uk.net. The website replaces the old ICANA website, this version, this incarnation of it that we have here. And we've tried to make it more interactive for people. Although it is still an ongoing project, and we're always trying to develop and improve it. So just I've put together a few screen captures here of some of the pages. The website has both public and members-only areas, so it's quite important, I think, for our members that they feel that when they do ask questions, and that it's not always necessarily in the public domain, so it encourages a level of interaction that sometimes public websites may not. So the aim of the website is not only to promote the society, but also to support its members. And here on this homepage, on this first page, where we can see a smashing picture of Martin, which he replaced a picture she didn't like, I think, of himself on there, that allows you to access most of the areas. And the primary one here is to log in as a member. Now, this is obviously a screen capture from when I was logged in. It's got my name there along the top. And the main menu bar down the left-hand side allows access to the many areas of the site listed in that navigation panel. If we move on to the next slide, the forums. The forums are really a members-only area, and they're one of the key areas of the website. They're broken down into clinical specialties, as you can see, acute, community, mental health, and the various other special interest groups also have their own forums, like research and development, education, audit and surveillance. Each forum really is for nurses, for infection prevention professionals, to ask and seek advice and support, and to offer that support back as well to others working in the ever-changing world of infection prevention. If we go on to the next slide, one of the problems that we'd had with the forum was that it was required to go into each of the different forums to find what the new posts were. So we've listened to the members, and we've come up with this forum activity in the last week idea, whereby with this new facility, people are able to see just the forum posts that have changed in the last week, and that enables people to quickly browse through the first few lines of the recently updated posts across a range of different forums. It can be really useful, and if I'm sure we've all pressed for time sometimes, and this just makes it really quick and a bit more user-friendly. On the next page, you can see is dedicated to resources. Again, if you also notice that the panel down the left-hand side, the navigation pane has changed now and has expanded in the members area. Again, this resource page is just for members only. So it's a place where practitioners can share resources, posters, leaflets, presentations, and other educational and promotional materials. And you can find all of these here. But at the end of the day, we can only share what people are prepared to share. So it's really important that IPS members do contribute to the website and submit their training and resource material so people can access them from this page. If we go on to the next slide, it says renew your membership. This is a new feature that we put into the new IPS website. And it's very useful, particularly because IPS members may move between different sites, different trusts, and this enables them to renew their membership online and do it quickly with a secure website. Google Checkout enables them to pay by credit card instead of waiting for checks to go through and other means of payment that people have. On the next page, updating your details, people are able to keep their details up to date. Previously, we'd had a IPS CD with all the members' details in, and intrinsically it was always out of date as soon as it was produced, really. So by putting it on the website, people can keep their details bang up to date, and the database enables them, therefore, to receive relevant information and circulars from the IPS through Fitwise. On the next page there, that actually just shows you what the updating your details page looks like. This is my page. And only the individual member who's logged in can change their details. So it's really useful if your circumstances change or as I say, if you change your employer, you can seamlessly stay up to date with all the latest news. The previous information is updated very quickly. And you just submit that, as it says there. Click the continue button. On the final slide, I've just given you a sneak preview of what our new updated website may look like. The IT group are forever working to try and improve and meet the needs, really, of what the IPS members need. So we're forever changing the website. So this slide shows you how the redesigned site may look. It perhaps won't look exactly like this, but we're actively seeking input and suggestions and ideas all the time from the members. On how we can meet the needs and improve the website, really.
I think the new website potentially looks really excellent, and it's nice to see you've been listening to members and finding, I've found personally, the last week's posts very useful, just to be able to have a quick scan of what's been going on rather than going into each folder directly. So that's,
yeah, I think that has been a benefit. Yeah.
Well, thanks very much for all that, Charlie.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you.
And now, just in summing up then, I mean, I think you'll see from all the different presentations we've had how active a society we are, and that there are great opportunities for all members to contribute in this, in consultation processes, etc. I mean, and also, in addition to the actual activities of the various different groups, the IPS always registers as stakeholder groups for guideline development and new guidance that may be coming out. And I would urge all members to actually look for that when we put out calls for people to actually look at documents and comment on them and feedback via Tracy Cooper, because this is our opportunity to shape the guidance we will eventually have to work with. And I think that's a key benefit of membership, and that we are always a key stakeholder for most guidance that comes out. What I would say to you all is please think about getting involved. I've been really heartened for the response from the community group over the last week, because I've had some very experienced members put their hand up, but I've also had some people who are new to the society, new to infection prevention control, who are keen to get involved. I think it's a really healthy thing for the whole society, because new blood is what's going to keep driving society forward. What does concern me a bit at the moment is that I think some of the branches are struggling to get members to attend meetings, and I think we need to have a good look at why that is, and because the meetings do provide free education for all members, and maybe we'll try and find some way of giving measurable educational value to the educational sessions of the meetings that may go towards proper professional development and accreditation. The meetings are all useful. The education is good. You get peer group support. You know that you're not on your own. That's always been a key benefit to me of being a member of the IPS. And I would hope that people would consider going to the branches, and I hope that their employers will support that, because, as I say, it's free education, it's free development, professional development for their staff. Now, if you're struggling with your branch and you don't think it's meeting your needs, then that also needs to be discussed within the branch so that you can find a way forward amongst yourselves. I think that's really important. So in conclusion, I really look forward to seeing you all in Harrogate in September. Everybody knows how to contact me. You can email me. I'm happy to chat anything over with anybody at any time. I look forward to seeing you in Harrogate in September. And my grateful thanks to all the contributors. I think it's been a really good hour. Once again, my thanks to Debbie King for hosting the event, and my thanks to Paul Webber for laying this on, because it's a great opportunity for us to be able to contribute to members. So thank you very much, and back to you, Debbie.
Thank you very much, Martin. I'm sure everybody will agree that it's always useful to have the eminent people from the society that are running our society on our behalf on the end of the phone, that telling us all the exciting things that are going on. And I mean, as some of you are aware, I'm quite heavily involved with the society, and it still stuns me the amount of work that everybody gets done in their spare time as well as working. So thank you very much from us to everybody who presented today. In relation to the journal, Martin, is it going to be the case that, because I know sometimes in the past practitioners have felt it much easier to contribute letters sort of to the green journal, to the editor. Is that something that the JIP is going to be doing?
Yes, I think so, Debbie. I think that's a really useful thing. I'd like to see some opinion columns to get a bit of debate going. And I know Paul would very much welcome letters and get some discussion going. So I think that would be a really useful development.
Because I know we've had a discussion in our team this morning about a piece of work that we were going to do. And the first thing we thought of was the editorials for the Green Journal. But actually, I think I'd rather put it in JIP.
I'd rather you did as well.
Get it going a bit. So.
No,
okay,
I completely agree. I'd like to see a bit more discussion and debate in there as well. So there's a lot of opportunity with the journal. You know, I think the last episode, the edition of the urinary catheter-based one, it shows us the potential for it, because that was a really substantial journal, and I know it's very well received.
Yeah, it was very good. We will be losing our connection in a moment. I would just draw your attention to the final slide in your pack, which just outlines the remaining teleclasses in the series for this year. Maria, Lauren and I are currently working on the future teleclasses for next year, and obviously you'll note that there is going to be a broadcast from conference, not to deter from anyone actually attending conference, but for those of you that can't make it, there will be a telecast broadcast from Harrogate. You'll note that these sessions are free for IPS members, which is £60 worth of education, which isn't bad really when you don't even have any travel and you don't have to move from the comfort of your chair, and you can do your emails at the same time. So lots of benefits to be had. So once again, I'd say thank you to everyone for joining today. Thank you to all of the officers from IPS who've presented to us this afternoon, and I look forward to speaking to you all again soon. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks.